Into sports.
20 yards out, Urs to shoot. Don't shoot! Oh, what a goal for Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah.
No. Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports, ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your App Store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network, with Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural, protein-powered chicken bites.
Friday Night Racing
on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. Love every racing moment. Visit hri.ie.
And you're very welcome along to this week's edition of Friday Night Racing. It is myself and Tom Malone here with you this Friday. Yeah, Johnny will be back next week. But in the meantime, we've got a brilliant show lined up for you. Before we get into it, though, I do want to tell you about what's happening next week, because next Friday is the Breast Cancer Ireland Race Day at Leopardstown. It's happening all day. The final race of the day is the specific ladies' race. And it's a massive fundraiser that happens every year to help raise money for breast cancer research. If you want to get involved, we'd love for you to do that. You can donate €4 to Breast Cancer Ireland by just texting CURE to 50300. You can get afternoon tea at home and enjoy it delivered from the comfort of your own home as you consume some of the racing. And everybody who does that will also be donating a fiver from the price of the afternoon tea. So there's loads of different ways you can get involved. Ideally, you'll get involved by watching the great content that we're creating for you as well. We've got a special next week called Back on Track, Lessons from a Sporting Life. It's going to feature Nina Carberry, Irish Rugby International, Sene Nwupu, four-time All-Ireland winner Ursula Jacob, and many more as well, talking about their lives in sport, the pathways, the inspiration, the mentors along the way, the difficulties that they faced, and how they ultimately ended up being incredibly high achievers as well. So plenty to get our teeth stuck into, and we'll be bringing that to you next Thursday and Friday. And as I said, it's all to support the Breast Cancer Ireland Race Day at Leopardstown next Friday the 14th. So if you're getting involved in watching us, or indeed if you're getting involved in watching the races next Friday at Leopardstown, then please donate what you can at breastcancerireland.com, or of course, as I said, you can text CURE to 50300. You'll donate €4 to Breast Cancer Ireland that way, and 100% of the text cost goes to Breast Cancer Ireland across most of the network providers. Now, this is Friday Night Racing, brought to you every Friday afternoon at 3 o'clock. The best place to catch us these days is on the OTB Sports app. You can also get us on youtube.com/offtheball. Or if you're a radio listener, then you hear us at 8 o'clock on Friday evening on Off the Ball on News Talk 2. We're going to get into a pretty eventful week for Tom in terms of some of the foaling that has been going on at his place. But in the meantime, I'm delighted to go live to Downpatrick to join Philip Rothwell this afternoon for us. Philip, you've got a runner this evening called Right Back At You. Is that right?
Yeah, I just had a runner in the maiden hurdle there 5 minutes ago. Delighted with him. He ran a lovely race. He's a horse that I only have maybe a month, and I think he can improve, and maybe he might make a reasonable horse for the future. So I was delighted with him. I have a 13-year-old that's probably on the road to retirement running in the handicap chase later. So hopeful more than optimistic, I can think. It'd be the best way of putting it, but he's been a great stalwart, and hopefully he runs okay and come home safe.
Okay, meetings like today, off the back of the week that you're having, do you automatically go into them with a little bit more pep in your step?
Definitely. It's when the yard is going well in general, and we've seen both sides of it over the years. It's good for staff. It's good for me. It's good for morale. It's good for my family at home. I'd say it's much easier for them to live with me. A bit deceived me this weather, but it's not a lot. But when I am there, I'd say I'm in better form.
Look, that's a really good point. When we were chatting about this a little bit earlier on, the highs and lows and the roller coaster of everything. Let's talk about the highs, because you're bang smack in the middle of one at the moment. Five winners in the space of a week. Was it three at Punchestown?
Yeah.
So how do you put what that lightning of that week is and stick it in the bottle and go, here's my little bottle of lightning that I'm carrying around for me from now on?
Do you know something? The last 2 years have been very positive for me. Last year, we had a decent season. I was really happy with it. The horses all ran well all year. COVID came and racing stopped for a few months. And just a week before racing stopped, we'd had a winner and we'd had a very good run up to that. So we stopped in a positive place. I let all the horses out for a couple of months, didn't charge owners, let them out to grass. Very fortunate that my dad is a dairy farmer, so it robbed some of the grass, and let them out, and probably didn't ask until I had done it, which was a help, and got them all out, gave them a good break, and they came back in well. When they came back in, we had a very wet winter, which probably didn't suit. But after Christmas, once things dried up a little bit and we got rolling, we've had a good season. I think we've had a dozen winners or a few maybe more since Christmas, which has been wonderful. But I have very, very, very good staff, very supportive family and brilliant owners. So that makes life a lot easier.
And Philip, like the kind of horse you have, I guess you talk about the good ground there. You know, there are probably a few more opportunities when the ground's a bit better, the summer racing and that. Is that the kind of horse? Looking through the stats, I think you're the ninth most horses run out of everyone over jumps this season. So you're obviously very busy.
There's no secret that I started off maybe 20 years ago buying cheaper horses, let's say, and trying to buy a cheap store, put a few lads into it for a bit of fun and get going. And we've just over 300 jumps winners trained in Ireland now. But for a couple of years, I was able to stay in the top six trainers in the country with results. And then the economic crash came along and probably lost an owner who was maybe the most prominent person in the place at the time. And then I had seven horses for Michael O'Leary, and six of them actually won out of the seven. But I lost his ownership a year later, and the horses weren't healthy in the yard that year as well. So we went from having full yard of 45 horses to maybe 10 left. And if I put all 10 together, you wouldn't make up one. There were bits that I was delighted to have the support to have, but we were starting, I started training when I was 20, and I felt like I was back to where 18. We had made no progress, even though I had had 10 really good years. We had built a facility up at home. We had been making a good bit of progress that way, and then we were back to square one all over again. So the last number of years has been a slow rebuild all over again, but I don't mind hard work. Driving the box here today myself, I'd be here on my own other than for I'm lucky enough to do the podcast with you guys, and other than that, so Rosanna came with me today to give me a hand and to give me the time to come talk to you guys. But I don't mind hard work. I love working with the horses. I love my life at home, so in a good place.
Can you take us back to that? Because I'm always fascinated by these stories of recovery and comeback, because ultimately that's what defines us, as opposed to the bad times in any walk of life. And when you were back down to that smaller number of horses, was there any point where you thought, okay, my dad's a dairy farmer, I'm going to have to look at something else here. I've given this a crack and it hasn't worked out for me.
I've often looked at other things, but when I look at something else, I look at it with a view to supplementing what I'm doing, because whatever age I live to, I'll die galloping a racehorse. That's for certain sure. I love it. If you didn't love training National Hunt horses, you wouldn't be doing it. The economic gain is not huge. The biggest thing that I worry about is that I can't provide enough for my family, that if I was doing other things, maybe it would be economically more lucrative. However, I had friends there from school have a syndicate with me, and one or two of them came over to visit there back a year ago or more now. And they just said to me, look around you, the facility you have and the family home you have, and it's a great place to rear the kids and for the kids to grow up. And I'm very positive that way. I love where I live and I love life at home. So as I say, that makes up for an awful lot of the stress and pressure of financial pressure, I suppose.
And how did the recovery begin then?
Same thing. As I say, I never seen it as recovery. I just said, I never lost confidence in what I do. I think I'm good at what I do. I was always pretty confident that I'm good at what I do. I really enjoy it. If I was starting all over again, or if one of my kids wanted to train race horses, would I help them and maybe send them on a different path? Yes, I would. I probably branded myself early on as cheap and cheerful. I started at 20 years of age. I got a huge amount of press publicity. I was training horses off my dad's dairy farm at that stage for £70 a week. and I'm branded myself as cheap and cheerful, and I flew. Like, I ended up, as I say, my third season, I think we were in the top 10 in the country, which was phenomenal for somebody coming from a non-racing background. And but with that, there was a huge number of lessons to be learned. Like, I was hugely immature, but didn't think it at the time. As I say, self-confidence wasn't a problem. And but you know, made loads of mistakes. But I made my own mistakes. And I would say my dad, as I grew up, he'd allow me make my own mistakes. And it probably was hard for him to watch from time to time, seeing some of them as time went on. But he'd allow you make my own mistakes. And I'll always sort of take that going forward with my own kids. And I think I've learned a lot. And I'm 43 now. And as I say, things are good.
Yeah, Philip, you're obviously from Wicklow as well. It's not the most kind of obvious place to train racehorses. Maybe at that time, maybe 08, 09, when things were going down, how was it trying to get owners and just trying to get horses in? You know, obviously you're not near the Curragh, you're not kind of in Tipperary or anything like that.
When I started off, so I was in school in King's Austin, Dublin, and I played a lot of sports. So I loved sport. I loved rugby. I loved canoeing. I loved swimming. I loved football. I loved hurling. Like, I'm sports fanatic. And so growing up, my mum was literally a taxi driver. She brought me from one event to the next to the next. But I also grew up on ponies. And I loved horses the whole way along. And Dad used to bring me point to point in as a kid all the time on a Sunday. I pleaded with him to bring me to the Irish National one year, and I went, and the crowds were massive. He hated it and I loved it. And got to transition year in boarding school and did my work experience with Willie Mullins. Went to Ag College after school, and straight away I was up in Aidan O'Brien's in the morning when he was champion jumps trainer, and spent more time up there than in college. Just loved it. And did my college work placement in Jessica Harrington's. So I'd imagine that tells the tale. Like, I always wanted to do it. Actually, coming out of Willie's at 15, knowing that I'd love to train racehorses, when I went there, I was overawed at that stage by the level of work and the amount of facility you needed to do well at it. And I probably came home from there thinking, I can never do this. And just, but it was all I ever wanted to do. So, as I say, when I left school, I went down to Ag College, but principally to get my green cert and to work for Aidan O'Brien. So,
not a bad trio of people to give you an introduction in terms of the work ethic required and just the absolute world-class talent that they have. That's a pretty good introduction.
The talent in this country is amazing, and the quality of Irish stable staff we have is incredible. I know that a number of lads working with me at home that probably could do as well or better with the license. Like, they're just great guys and girls, and that's a massive help to have a team like that behind you. I'd say when I started off, I had a good small team, and maybe. We built a team very quick at the time because we had to. We built a facility very quick because we had to. And ultimately, I probably wasn't mature enough to be able to deal with it. So I don't blame the total downturn, as I say, for a few quiet years. You know, like it happened, and as the horses weren't healthy there for a year, maybe out of a problem with feed. And but you learn all the time. And
is that what you meant by, I was going to ask, you've talked about maturity a bit there, and it's interesting because in retrospect, you can always pinpoint the bits where you make a rash decision that you have to pay repercussions for a long period of time. Is an example of the immaturity not spotting that the feed was the wrong feed or something like that?
No, definitely not. The feed issue, unfortunately, I don't want to get into it too much, but it was a thing whereby... our horses just weren't. They were galloping like asthmatics for a few days, and right. just it took it took um, it took time to have everything tested. And like we do routine checks all the time at home. I check my water, check my feed, check my hay. You have to check everything. That's just the way it is. Everything is so competitive now, and you have to be meticulous about everything you do. And one or two times over the years, we changed things. And when we changed them to try change things up, I think we made mistakes. So I'm very happy with the routine we have at home. I am very happy with the quality of feed and whatever we use now. And one massive lesson that I've learned over the years is to stop trying to change some of the things up, to keep it simple and stay doing it. Stay doing what you're doing when it's working, because obviously it's working and you're good at it. So just keep doing what you're doing. But ultimately, anybody that knows me would know that I'd be very competitive, and I was always trying to find that little edge or trying to change to make something better. And sometimes when you try to do that, you make it a lot worse rather than better.
Yeah. I was going to say, the other corollary of like being very inexperienced as a 20-year-old getting into the game at 43, all of a sudden you've got reams and reams and reams of experience, and you are still young enough for this to be the midpoint in your career.
One horse is what we're all looking for again. I've been very fortunate over the years, like we've had a couple of good horses, but I love Shop and Bargain Basement at the Sales. As I say, it was probably a mistake of mine in the early days to brand myself as Cheap and Cheerful, because we went off and bought very cheap stores that were good movers, nice horses, but there was obviously some little thing that made one less expensive than another. But ultimately, when you're buying horses at that level every year, it's like playing poker. You get a good hand of cards and you get a bad hand of cards. And you're going to keep getting more good hands of horses if your budget is higher. And that's just the way it is. It just makes sense that way. When I was younger, I would have said, no matter what horse came into the yard, I'll win with it. I had that level of, as I say, self-belief that like I'll find a race for it somewhere, I'd hate to give up. Obviously, the quality has improved seriously in this country in the last 10 years. Like the standard now is amazing of horses, as I say, of trainers, of jockeys. It's incredible. The facility at the races has gone so much better. I can't wait for the general public to get back racing and see the new Leopardstown and the facilities in general at the tracks. I'm in Downpatrick today, and for a small race course, I remember stabling horses here 20 years ago in a back garden across the road of a house. And like the facilities here now are incredible, and year on year they've kept improving them. So the buzz about National Hunt racing at the moment as well is incredible. And I'd love to have owners back racing very soon. I think it's really, really important that we get owners back racing as soon as we possibly can. And I don't see any reason why they shouldn't be allowed, because realistically, on a small race like day like today, there'd be maybe only 50 people show up. And if we're going to have outdoor dining back on the 7th of June, I think it is, I see absolutely zero reason why we can't have owners back racing ASAP, because owners fund, they fund me, my family, they fund all the jockeys, they fund the whole thing, basically. And I think it's really, really, really important that there's a directive brought out straight away to get owners back racing as soon as we can. I totally accept that the general public, that big crowds, that the country has to be very careful. And I think racing in general has done a brilliant job to keep the whole thing going. And have to be very proud of our sector. And actually, I'd imagine it's getting more popular than it ever has been for the level of press we've had over the last couple of months, but we need to get owners back ASAP.
Philip, on that, and speaking kind of as an owner myself, maybe you would have horses that maybe fallen maybe below that kind of magic mark of 123, they're in 0-95s or 0-103s or whatever. It's very, very difficult to get a run. How are you finding that at the moment? I mean, I kind of put it up on Twitter. I'm in a syndicate, and I think we've been validated about five or six times since I think St. Patrick's Day. And since I put it out, I found more and more people coming to me saying that as well. How are you finding getting a run into your horses, particularly those kind of summer handicappers?
Yes, it's difficult, but I totally understand the situation. We have point-to-pointers that haven't been able to run in point-to-points, so there's an extra number of those now in the race course. We have a crossover between winter horses that didn't get to run and summer horses at the moment, so every horse in the country is in training at the moment. There's nothing on holidays. There was Punchestown Festival, no low-grade racing. Fairy House Festival, no low-grade racing. After the Fairy House Festival, there was a backlog. There was always going to be a backlog after Punchestown. I think HRI are doing a good job. They put on an extra race meeting or two. They're trying to sort it out. They need probably to do a little bit more, but they are trying. And then the balloting system in Ireland is very complex. And when you actually really, really understand it, they are doing their deadlift and best to get us runners. Now, I had a horse won a handicap in, luckily in Ballinrobe the other night, and I'd love to be running him again without his massive penalty in Cork at the weekend, and he's liable 88. And yes, that's frustrating, but that's the system. They're trying to do their best. And I think in a 3 or 4 weeks' time, we'll have forgotten about it, because I actually think it'll get sorted out. I think a lot of the winter horses will be on their summer breaks, and I think it'll sort itself out. I think they will get a few extra race meetings on, maybe. There's the new calendar coming out for July and August, still isn't printed, because they are actually trying their best to put on extra meetings. We probably could do one or two more divides, but look, at as I say, I know they're trying.
Yeah, just one other thing you mentioned about buying horses there, and you said maybe somebody wouldn't be aware of what you meant when you said the store sales. So store sales are generally unbroken three-year-olds sort of before they start their racing career. And that's, yes, you know, the likes of the Derby sale, the Land Rover sale, and that's where a lot of these big names have come from before they go to the point-to-points and the like, and then they get sold at the more high-profile sales that have kind of been making headlines at Cheltenham and the like. But is that still where you're shopping? Is that still where you're sourcing the vast majority of your horses? I'm going to say that means you'll have those horses for longer. You still are responsible for breaking them and starting them off, or are you kind of moving into getting a few more horses in training type, or what's the way you buy your horses now?
Okay, so when I was on a rebuild, we'll say, it was very much go to the store sales to buy an unbroken three-year-old, shop small, because I always believe that a horse doesn't know what he costs, and I had a very, very limited budget. I had a very good facility at home, but if I started putting money into horses that I couldn't afford to be buying, it was going to put us under serious pressure. So I just didn't do it. We started shopping very much bargain basement. And one of my Punchestown Festival winners, well, both of them were actually bought very cheaply. But Cousin Harry, I bought him in Goresbridge. He's a half-brother to a Stairs hurdle winner. And I bought him in Goresbridge for €1,500. We broke him at home ourselves. We produced them from scratch ourselves. He won a handicap in Navan, and he went to the festival in Fairy House, his next run. Wish to God owners were able to enjoy that. But went to Fairy House, his next run, and then won at the Punchestown Festival. And the lads are great that own them. Like they had a magic time, and they really enjoyed it. But I would really love for them to be there.
Yeah, it's incredible. By the way, to buy a horse for £1,500 and even to get it to win a race is just the most. It's a pretty incredible return on investment, really. When you see the prices that do, you know, some of those stores make, and then even beyond that when they go and produce something later on. So it is easy to see why, you know, that's where you do go and look. Especially like you say, if you're in a good position where you've got excellent facilities to start these horses off.
I think our facilities are as good as anybody's. My staff are better than most. I'm very proud of them. The facilities at home are top class, and it's up to me then to bring in a better type of horse and to manage the thing. And like, we've been there before, very confident we'll get back there again, but it's a gradual build. And as I say, the one thing I couldn't afford to do was to go out and chance buying more expensive horses. At that time, like, owners have been like hugely supportive of me over the last 15 or 20 years, and most of the owners at home, they're not, I keep saying owners, but they're not owners, they're not clients, they're very good friends now, and they totally understood me and where I wanted to go. And like, yes, I've spoken about the cheaper horses. There's some guys have bought a lot more expensive stores, some of them have worked out, some of them haven't, but like, as I say, we are on a rebuild. We have some lovely horses around the place now. And hopefully we can build on it.
And so weeks like the week you've just had, there's a chance for the whole place to just exhale and go, well, we are absolutely on the right track. Let's enjoy this.
Yeah, I actually never did it. I haven't taken time. I've been on the road. So obviously I was in Ballinrobe on Tuesday evening. and came home flat. Great to be on the side of the gallop all morning, Wednesday morning. Same this morning. But I drove back up to Downpatrick today, Cork tomorrow, Killarney Sunday. I know I'm at home Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday next week. My wife mentioned half a day off, maybe. I think she actually mentioned a day off. That won't happen, but we might try. We might try take an afternoon.
Well, you deserve the afternoon at least.
Yeah, we'll do something. It's more the one thing I would have definitely said, like over the years, without Niamh and the kids understanding like what I do. It's 7 days a week, so, and it's pretty full on, so it's tough on them too, you know.
Well, it must have been great for them as well then to see.
And, super,
and,
I hope.
And I guess when you're in the car and there's those moments where your mind idles and whatever is on the radio kind of disappears from your actual consciousness, are you thinking at that point going, well, this is good, this is validation for all of those decisions to go to the store and buy that horse for 1500 quid? And that's the type of thing that, like, it's, you know, the broad sweep of the racing industry, as we talk about here, there are so many different aspects to it, but it's quite a small industry too, where, you know, hard work gets noticed and staying at it and resilience definitely is the type of thing. It's a common theme on the show week to week that so many people have had setbacks but have come back from them and have reached
a point
where, yeah,
it's sport, I think. And you're in the public eye no matter what anybody says, and some people are good at dealing with it and some people aren't as good at dealing with it. And like, whether you're a rugby player, soccer player, jockey, trainer, no matter what, like, at the end of the day, you're master of your own destiny. And yes, you'll have setbacks. And yeah, you just have to be, I suppose, mentally and like, from my side, I need to be mentally strong enough to be able to deal with it and kick on. And I think I'm pretty good that way. I'd be very positive and I'd be pretty focused. As I say, the biggest, it's not solely about, like, I love doing what I'm doing. I'm very confident doing what I'm doing. I don't have any regrets, but the only thing that from time to time would burden me as such would be that I would think, as I say, if I was doing something else sometimes, would that be better for my wife and my kids and for them going forward, like, you know? But other than that, I'd be selfish enough. Like, I just, as I say, I love doing what I'm doing.
Yeah, I think the whole world has those kind of sliding doors moments where you wonder about what life would have been like if you'd done something completely different.
Just for everybody else, you know, it's for the people around me. Like, I wouldn't like to see them suffer. I wonder, like, could I have done better by them? But as I say, from my own side, no, like, well, I love getting up in the morning. I love going up the yard.
And would you be unhappy doing something else is the other thing. So, like, you know, there might be financial security, but you could be.
I wouldn't be as happy as what I am doing, what I'm doing.
And your kids don't care. Like, you talk about the horse not knowing, you know.
True enough. And that's what my friends would have said to me. But that's the only thing that I would have ever, I'd never look at a year where results weren't good enough and think, should I be doing something? That would never cross my mind. Like, if I could do better by my family, I'd love to. That's like, they come first. But outside of that, you know, racing is just, I always loved it and I would like to be doing nothing else.
Well, there's one last thing there, Philip, that you mentioned that I just wanted to ask you about. You talked about being in the public eye and you talked about getting publicity in your early 20s.
Yeah.
It's really difficult to deal with that because it seems great when it's positive at the start, but inevitably there's somebody somewhere who says something negative and all the world will tell you don't pay any attention to them. But, like, you know, it's impossible not to stare at the shiny red light that's you know, not positive. It's very difficult. Were you good at that immediately, or did that take a while to get used to, or how did that work out for you?
No, I'd say I was good at it in the sense that I'd be self-confident that I know that I'm pretty good at what I do, and I know that over the years that I have built up a fair degree of knowledge, so much so that, like, you know, when a vet would be called to the yard at home, he'd be called for a real reason, because you'd know yourself before they come kind of what's wrong. And, like, from start to finish, I think I have a fair understanding of jumps racing in Ireland, and, like, I just I live and breathe it. I don't think about a whole lot else from day to day. I just absolutely love it. And So, like, winning in a 0-95 handicap for me, you hear me screaming them on the track, like, as if it was a Cheltenham Gold Cup, because I just get such a buzz and such a high out of it. It's unbelievable. I'm really passionate about it. And it's, sometimes it's not just even for me. Like, I feel that for the people that have trusted me with their horse and the amount of money they've put in to support me with their horse, that, like, getting a result, I get some kick out of that for them. You know, like, I really, really want to achieve for the people that are supporting me.
Yeah, well, look, we're delighted. It's a brilliant story, and it obviously is coming good for you as well. In terms of the next 20 years, the next 25 years, you know, you mentioned Willie Mullins, obviously, there's the longevity, and we've seen so many great racing careers have that type of longevity. What do you do as those horses around the place start to come to fruition? Do you change your approach a little bit and go for the higher cost? Do you mix it? What's your strategy?
I'd love to, like, you know, there's no secret, like, I'd love to be back in the top half dozen trainers in the country with results. Like, I'd love to be there. However, I'm not going to increase the size of the facility to do it. So if tomorrow morning I was fortunate enough to be in a position to have an under 30 horses, I'm not going to do that. I've been there before. I've had obviously a greater number than what I have now before. It's not something that I aspire to do in the future. People would say everybody should aspire to be champion, whether it be champion trainer, champion jockey, whatever. It's not an aspiration of mine right now. I would like to have grade one winners. I would like to have better horses. I'd like to be in a position where there's a set number in the yard, which is 45-50, that I don't get any bigger than that. That I can give my utmost attention to those 50, and that if any one of those horses that were to go somewhere else, nobody else could do any better with it, that I'd have given it my 100% total care and attention, and that I've done the best that I possibly could do with those. And I know there's brilliant teams out there working in big yards, but ultimately it's a brilliant team working in a big yard. There's no way any one single person can get around to massive numbers of horses. So it's not that I don't have aspirations of being the best I can be. I just don't want to end up here. I'm not in a position to have the bigger numbers anyway at the moment. I'm not suggesting I am. But if I was fortunate enough to have a massive number tomorrow morning, I don't want to do that. I have amazing owners. They're not just owners, they're friends. I'd like to keep those friends. I'd like to have a better class of horse. And I'd like to build on that. And if you were a person that was into statistics or that sort of thing, if you looked at my stats, they're not hugely impressive. Why are they not hugely impressive? Because I run cheap maidens in three or four maiden hurdles in a number of handicaps to get them to a rating that they're able to achieve something. I love it. I think I'm very good at it, and I really like it. But a horse has to run six or seven times to get where you want to be and to achieve something. If you go out and you are in a position where you can spend $250,000 in the morning on a proven point-to-pointer who's won 10 lengths, well, he's 6-4 favourite for a maiden hurdle next week. Your stats are obviously going to be much better. Doesn't mean you're better at doing the job than anybody else, but your stats are going to be a huge amount better. So I think the people that are diehard Jumps fans and really understand the game, they've seen me driving length and breadth of the country for the last 20 years, and the amount of well-wishers we've had over the last couple of months is incredible. And as I say, even through the bad years, like, the support I've had from people has never gone away. You know, people believe obviously in what we do, and should get a great sense of satisfaction out of that.
Yeah, look, it's a brilliant story. You've told it really well and articulated that whole other side of the business to us brilliantly this afternoon. I wish you all the continued success, Philip. As I said, it's
Thank
a brilliant
you very
story.
Much.
Thanks a million for making
Thank,
the time for
thanks,
us today.
Cheers, thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, no worries, and best of luck this
Thank
afternoon
you. Cheers.
As well.
Thank you.
So that is a great story there. That's Philip Rothwell telling us his story live from Downpatrick this afternoon here on Off the Ball. This is Friday Night Racing, brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. Love every racing moment. Visit hri.ie or follow the new Twitter account at HRI Racing, and the hashtag is Every Racing Moment. We've just had it confirmed as well. Katie Harrington is going to be on our Back on Track Lessons from a Sporting Life series of shows next Thursday and Friday here, as we preview the Breast Cancer Ireland Race Day happening at Leopardstown next Friday. And a reminder, of course, you can donate at breastcancerireland.com. So a brilliant cause, and we're going to have brilliant panels talking about that on Friday Night Racing next week and also on Thursday evening as well. Now, I did say that we had some other news. There's been an addition to the Malone sporting family. You fold a... well, I don't know.
It was a cold, yeah. No, it was, and it's a good story, and it all started on the old OTB Stallion Trail with HRI as well. So you remember pre-COVID, I guess it was. Well, it must have been. I think it was last January, and we all went down and we did our tour with HRI and did a bit of a social media takeover. And one of the stallions we saw was Poet's Word in Boards Mill, and he was a wonderful racehorse, and he's a gorgeous looking horse by Dubawi, obviously a champion sire himself. Has now landed in Ireland, and my partner and her brother have a couple of mares that we keep at home, and so we sent both mares to Poet's Word. So over the last couple of weeks, we've had a couple of new arrivals, a filly 2 weeks ago, and then last Sunday night, we had a colt, and it was a pretty hands-on experience, Ger, because we've only got a couple of stables, we've only got two mares, so. You know, we're not really in a position to go and pay for someone else to fold them. So we got a camera put into one of the stables, and that involves sort of, you know, setting your alarm every 2 hours every night and waking up. But luckily, just before midnight last Sunday, Barbara was looking at the phone and was like, is that a foot? And I was like, you're being ridiculous. You're looking at this too much. Don't stop. Anyway, about 10 minutes later, you just see a leg sticking out. So we had to run out to the stable, get the buckets of water, get the old gloves on and delivered it there. And then he's such a lovely big colt as well. Like normally with mares, they just drop out. The other mare just dropped out. It was great. We just had to kind of watch and just make sure everything was okay with this fella. I needed a little bit of helping hands. So yeah, I had to get down, roll up my sleeves and pulled him out just about 10 to 12 on last Sunday night. So
wow.
properly got my hands dirty, Ger.
Midwife Malone.
Yeah, that's it. There you go. The nickname makes itself, right?
And so this is like really fascinating to me. So what happens to the foals now?
Well, they're just being kids at the moment. They're literally like kids. Their nose is into everything. So we've set up little paddocks. They're very kind of small areas just so they can go out with their mums and you know, stretch the legs a little bit. And we'll hold on to them for a couple of months and then they'll be weaned, you know, separate the mares and the foals. And then hopefully all going well, we'll sell them as foals again. That's what hopefully will be the case. You know, never underestimate a horse's ability for self-harm. So, you know, you could end up stuck with one or two. Hopefully not. But the colt is an absolute smasher, like I said, by Poet's Word. Huge, huge, big colt. So it's always nice. That's always a really, really nice arrival. And the filly's a lovely, in fairness, the filly. We thought the filly was lovely, to be fair, when she arrived 2 weeks ago. But then this fella arrived on Sunday night, and he's an absolute monster. I don't know his exact weight, but, you know, he'd definitely be north of 60, 65 kilos anyway, which is a very, very good size for a foal.
And so they will be National Hunt horses eventually?
Yeah, hopefully, yeah. Both mares have stock on the ground, so the one who has the big colt, she's a full sister to a Cheltenham winner, the package. She's by Caif Tara, who would be, is now passed, but he won the top jump sires. She's got a couple of fellas on the ground, Picana, who won a point-to-point and sold for quite good money. We didn't sell him, but he did sell after he's let go of the foal. Another horse called A Time to Shine. So he's a sibling to them. They're all in training. They've run quite well. Again, they're all good, big National Hunt stamps of horses. So hopefully this fellow will be as well. So yeah, so come November, we'll be hopefully whooping and cheering at the foal sales in Tattersalls or Goffs or wherever. Hopefully there's a bidding war to recruit them.
That's class. Well, you've done a perfect sales pitch here this afternoon. That's a better question. When are they named? Are they walking around colt and filly and do you get to name them, or is that
No, they don't get named in France they will be named when they're born, when they're foals and whatever, but over here they don't get their racing name until they sort of go off to whether they're going to be a point-to-point or a racehorse. You'd name them when they get their hunter cert or when they're registered with, well, they'll be registered with Weatherby's once they're foals. Once you get their passports, they're registered, but they don't get their names until they're about to start racing. But yeah, we've called them Maya and Stevie anyway, because they're both by Poet's Word, so after Maya Angelou, and Stevie Nicks has also taken the mick out of Laura Whitmore.
All right, very good. Wow. excellent temporary names for
They are temporary names. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. No, but look, like it's really cool. The like I said, the weather's getting a little bit better now, and they can just be out a little bit longer. So we got a bit of a fright with the hail and the frosts and stuff during the week. Yeah. You know, that's obviously not ideal. So you just want to make sure they kept clean noses. Like the vet comes the next day and checks them over, and they get a little shot to make sure they don't, a little bit of penicillin or whatever, just to make sure, keep the old bugs at bay. But yeah, they're just noses into everything and suckling away from the mums like any baby. But I mean, they're up in an hour. They're up and running around in, both of them were on their feet within an hour and a half, which is just kind of nuts as well, you know, when you compare it to
babies. It is kind of magic.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely brilliant. Then you let them out in the field the next day and they're running around.
When you hear Philip talking about his mates from school coming and saying, "Man, look around, this is pretty sweet. This is a nice place to raise the kids." You're selling the lifestyle there pretty well, Tom.
Yeah, no, it's really nice. And look, my son's got a pony and he's a bit put out because the fields are taken up with foals at the moment. But look, it's absolutely magical and, we feel very, very lucky at the moment to be able to have these two. And like I said, hopefully they sell well. But they're pretty nice to have around the place and they're great for social media content at the moment as well. Good photos.
Yeah. What's your Instagram handle quickly?
At tom.malone.
There you go. Tom, thanks very much for joining us for this week's Friday Night Racing. It is Friday Night Racing broadcasting live on all of OTB's social channels at 3 o'clock every Friday afternoon. And then, of course, also broadcasting at 8 p.m. on Off the Ball on News Talk on the radio on the FM dial. Friday Night Racing is brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. Love every racing moment. At the moment, we are both scoreless, myself and Johnny, in the Tote 10 to follow. However, I do have one of my horses in action this weekend, so I would expect it's one of Aidan O'Brien's as well. So I would expect
I've won in two. I have McSweeney in at the weekend. I actually didn't put Poetic Flair in. Poetic Flair was in my long list and then I left him out. I also left I also left Japan out and put Mogul in, and Japan won during the week and Mogul got beaten last Sunday.
All right, I think I have Mogul as well. And maybe that's why I'm on zero. Tom, good stuff. Thanks a million. And we'll see you all next week. Cheers.
Friday Night Racing.
On Off the Ball.
Brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. Love every racing moment. Visit hri.ie.
The OTB Podcast Network. With Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural, protein-powered chicken bites.